Have you ever felt like your life was waiting for you somewhere else? Naples wasn't just calling Catherine Wilson in 1996, it was shouting, gesturing wildly with both hands, and refusing to take no for an answer. She arrived on a packed Delta flight for a 3-month internship at the U.S. consulate, armed with collegiate curiosity and a secret she'd never shared. Years of binge eating that left her cycling between starvation and shame. What she couldn't have known was that this chaotic, loud, unapologetically physical city would teach her something no therapist or diet plan ever could: how to actually live inside her own body. Naples doesn't whisper its lessons. It serves them on heaping plates of pasta, delivers them through slaps across the face when you're being ridiculous, and wraps them in the arms of a family that claims you before you even understand what's happening. When Salvatore Avalone arrived 20 minutes late in his tiny red Fiat, Catherine expected pizza. Instead, she got Raffaella, gorgeous, perfectly made up, and utterly uninterested in personal boundaries. Within minutes, Raffaella plunged her hands into Catherine's lap to brush away crumbs, exclaiming, "Briciole," as if stray breadcrumbs were a personal affront. In that cramped Posilipo kitchen, surrounded by Nino's gentle presence and Benedetta in teddy bear pajamas, Catherine felt something new. She belonged. Not as a carefully accommodated guest, but as someone who had always been there. The Avalones didn't just open their door, they absorbed her into their ecosystem. Years later, when she held newborn Emilio and they called her Zia before she'd even married into the family, Catherine understood. The Avalones didn't wait for paperwork to decide who was family. They knew it in their bodies first, and the rest was just formality. At 5'3" and 155 pounds, Catherine carried a secret heavier than her frame, binge eating disorder that had shadowed her since childhood. Her mother had put her on her first diet in kindergarten, and words like chunky and plump became the soundtrack of her youth. But in Naples, she stopped binging, not through willpower, but because the entire city conspired against disordered eating. Mealtimes were sacred rituals. Try ordering food at odd hours and cafes would refuse. "State quieto," keep your pants on, was what you'd hear if you seemed rushed. Fresh ingredients, prepared with love, and consumed in company left her satisfied in ways processed American food never had. When she described American habits to Maria Rosa, grabbing cereal boxes with cartoon characters, eating alone in cars, Maria Rosa's eyes filled with sadness. "Scombinato," she said, disorganized. The Italian term for eating disorder literally means disorganized, messy eating sickness. Italian girls draped themselves over motorbikes and embodied something Catherine had never known, being carnale, wonderfully, squeezably of the flesh. Raffaella's kitchen became Catherine's graduate school in living. Watching her prepare sartù di riso, an elaborate rice dish, Catherine kept asking about measurements. Raffaella wrapped an arm around her waist and whispered, "Più ci metti, più ci trovi." The more you put in, the more you get out. This applied to ingredients, effort, attention, love. When Catherine anxiously hovered, Raffaella would exclaim, "Lascia stare," leave it alone, teaching patience and trust. The secret to authentic Neapolitan ragù wasn't timing or measurements, but letting it pipiare, that gentle bubbling when sauce simmers for hours, filling the kitchen with promise. Later, in America, Raffaella stared at measuring spoons with amused disdain, Americani. Catherine's childhood had been defined by precision, mandatory skim milk, Flintstones vitamins as treats, food as scientific equation. When her friend Robin secretly let her taste whole milk, her world shattered with new possibilities. Now, in Raffaella's kitchen, she was learning that cooking wasn't about control, but about feeling, tradition, and love passed down through generations who never needed cups or teaspoons to know what tasted right. Neapolitan communication was a full-body experience. Hand gestures formed a parallel language, the thumb and index pistol shake meaning nothing, pulling down an eyelid to warn of cheating, the two-finger whistle gesture indicating death. Catherine learned dialect rather than proper Italian, with its lazy vowels and reflexive verbs. I ate myself a plate of pasta. This southern accent reminded her of her mother's Appalachian twang, that same pull-up-a-chair honey, soups-on quality that goes straight from ears to gut. The best theater happened on sidewalks and buses. When an elderly lady accused a middle-aged man of flatulence on the 140 bus, the whole bus chose sides until he bellowed, "Ma come fate a sapere? How do you think you know everything?" Even asking for directions became performance art. One well-dressed gentleman, asked about Via Noce, delivered a magnificent monologue despite having no idea where it was. After dramatic arm gestures and perfectly timed pauses, he concluded, "If I knew, it would be my great pleasure to impart this knowledge to you," then spun around and walked away. A perfect street performance that never provided directions. Neapolitan parents raise children to be schittato awake, impossible to deceive. The worst insult is being bacala, dumb as cod, or adurmuto, zombie-like. When Raffaella complained about thick-cut prosciutto, she wasn't difficult. She was demonstrating vigilance while helping the salumiere improve. Her mother-in-law, Clara, embodied this with her legendary egg inspection ritual. Inviting the vendor inside, offering water, not coffee — coffee was reserved for confidenza — she'd hold each egg to lamplight, rejecting any showing age shadows with, "Chisto tamagne tu, you eat this one yourself." This explained Catherine's shopping stress in Naples. Her mother had raced through suburban Safeway grabbing easy open bottles. Catherine faced interrogations from the saloniere about prosciutto types she couldn't see or touch. Overwhelmed, she retreated to Conad, the American-style supermarket, where prepackaged items didn't expose her culinary uncertainty. Even hospital visits became advocacy missions. Relatives arrived in mass, proving their worth through loud complaints about lunch quality, determined to confront any negligence. The transformation from visitor to family member came through a single word, "Eccomi, here I am." Raffaella's response to any request, no questions asked, no emotional price attached. When Catherine became pregnant and craved rigatoni alla Genovese, Raffaella immediately sent Nino for onions and booked her train to Rome. Neapolitan belief held that unsatisfied cravings cause birthmarks. The day after Easter at Caserta Palace Gardens, Catherine ate every bite of her personal casatiello, dense bread made with black pepper, salami, lard, bacon, cheese, crowned with a hard-boiled egg. As Raffaella carved melon and searched for an outlet for her espresso maker, Catherine realized she was finally free from her eating disorder. Her years of binge eating weren't problematic because of the binges, but because of the self-punishment that followed. She finally understood. The sacrifice was Jesus's body, not hers. In Naples, she heard him saying, "Buon appetito, signorina. Enjoy." When Catherine made Raffaella a salad using her grandfather's talent for dressings, and Raffaella exclaimed it was the best she'd ever tasted, the cultural exchange had come full circle. Home isn't where you're from. It's where you finally learn to feed yourself with love instead of shame.